seconds. One time for the underdog. One time for the underdog. Ignition sequence start.
Let me see you put 'em up. Reach the sky, touch the stars up above. Cause it's one time for the underdog. One time for the underdog.
So I live in Dallas, Texas, which Dallas, Texas is known for having a lot of people that want to look good. I mean, plastic surgery, right? And I lived in LA for 25 years, and it's becoming very normal nowadays. And I wanted to find out how much influence does social media with all these filters have to do with plastic surgery. So I went to the main host from the show, Botched, Paul Nassif, who's done over 10,000 nose jobs. And I said, tell me about the psychological issues you're dealing with today when you do surgeries on people. What are they telling you? And we broke it down. Some of the questions we went through, it's very technical, but I hope you enjoyed the sit down I have with Paul Nassif. I think you guys just renewed your fifth season, which
is airing right now.
It's airing right now as we speak. So he is a facial plastic surgeon, very well known in Beverly Hills. If you say the name here, obviously a lot of people know him, being half Armenian, half Assyrian. I know our community contributes towards a lot of the business that you do, because our nose is just such a perfect nose built for someone like you with the business that you do.
Plus, you know, I'm a Lebanese boy, so I know all about that.
Yes.
A lot of Middle Eastern patients, a lot of Armenians. Not many Assyrians, though. The Armenians in the Middle East, like us, you know, we all got the noses. And the Iranians, especially being in Beverly Hills.
Yeah.
And that's exactly right.
Sometimes I wonder, you know, if it costs $15,000 to make the nose look good, how much will it cost to make somebody's nose look like mine? That's the real question, right?
You got a good looking nose.
All the money in the world, it's going to take a lot of money for that. What makes somebody wake up in the morning and say, you know what? Here's what I want to do when I grow up. I want to go be a facial plastic surgeon. What was it?
You know, you're not born with that one.
Sure.
You're born with being a doctor, though. Age of 12 is when I started thinking about becoming a doctor. And then when I was in medical school, I got excited about ear, nose, and throat surgery. Because it was very cool. The anatomy was very different. You know, you're dealing with the skull, you're dealing with the neck with all the vital organs, you're dealing with, you know, cosmetic surgery, and it excited me. Then after you do that, then I steered, because in ENT you can go five different directions, to facial plastic surgery, because it is the most intriguing, and doing a rhinoplasty, which is about 75% of my practice now, and a lot of that is revision rhinoplasty, fixing up bad, you know, nose jobs.
Revision is second time around, or?
No, so 75% of my practice is revision.
Okay.
25% first time. Then out of all the noses, out of that 75%, probably 75-80% of that is revision surgery. So I got into liking facial plastic surgery, did a fellowship in that, came to Beverly Hills since I'm from LA, opened up in 1999, and I started doing revision nasal surgery with not that much experience, and now, that's kind of what I do.
But at 12 years old, you knew you were going to be a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
Parents doctors, mom or dad?
Uncle.
Uncle doctor.
Family practitioner in good old Glendale. Near Glendale and Burbank border.
So your uncle's a doctor?
Yeah, he's gone now.
He was a doctor?
Yes.
So would you sit there and watch him and say, I want to be like uncle when I grow up? Or was it a moment? Did you have a special moment that...
No, I liked it. I just automatically knew I wanted to do it. Maybe it was my mom saying, my son the doctor. Not my son the doctor. Actually, she didn't have a Bostonian accent.
She did or she did not?
She had the Bostonian accent.
Are you from? So you are Bostonian?
My mom's side.
By the way, blood doesn't bother you at all. Blood doesn't do anything for you.
I hope not. Otherwise, I couldn't do what I do
now. So from the beginning, like when you're cutting, none of that stuff does anything for you?
No.
So when I was in the Army, myself and all these bigger guys were all these athletes. And they say, okay, one of the things you need to do in boot camp is you need to put an IV into your friend's arm. So everybody's looking at each other saying, you want me to put an IV in my friend's arm? Yeah, that's a soldier. You're supposed to, but something happens, you got to take care of it. Paul, do you know how many people passed out?
Oh, yeah. Guys pass out all the time.
Oh, my. Biggest guys with tattoos were passing out. The toughest guys in the room were passing out.
Because they're tensing up and all of a sudden, it's called vagal. They all pass out.
So you knew right off the bat this was the route you were going to go. So let me ask you, how much has it changed from the moment you went in 1999 to today, 2018?
I mean, from what I do, obviously the prices went up.
Mm-hmm. Dramatically?
Yes.
What was it in 99? What is it today, give or take?
Well, plus I'm a little bit on the higher end of the spectrum, so I do charge more because I'm a specialist at what I do, and it's really hard. But in general, it's probably went up about 300%.
300% from 99 till today?
In surgeon fees, that's what I'm going to assume. Maybe 250. Two, the people's style or what they want, it keeps changing. Fluctuation of plastic surgery of what it should look like, and our biggest thing now is natural. The other thing that's changed is we're trying to do more non-invasive procedures and good skincare products to make you not age as much, rather than needing surgery or very heavy-duty lasers.
Mm-hmm.
So we're doing more non-invasive stuff. A lot more doctors call cosmetic surgeons, which really aren't plastic surgeons, that are doing aesthetic work. A lot more medical spas, like we have one, but not in a medical office. Things like that. I mean, overall, the and also more of an acceptance of having plastic surgery. It's grown.
Acceptance
especially
today.
Men. Men too.
Really? You think how much of that has been the cause of social media and filters and all this other stuff?
Everything.
So, really?
Social media has driven almost everything. Especially you do your selfies and the filters and you want to try to look like that. Also, people are out there getting botched. A lot of bad plastic surgeons or just bad things happening to people. But overall, as anything becomes more popular, you have more increase in everything. Complications, bad results, great results, people dying from plastic surgery.
People dying from plastic surgery.
I mean, all kinds of things can happen. So just in general, since there's been a huge rise in doing aesthetic procedures in the last 19 years, everything has increased. The good, the bad, the ugly, everything.
So when you start off day one, you obviously came in being a surgeon, but you didn't have any business background, right?
I do. I have a real estate finance degree from USC.
Had you ran a business before yourself? Or
yeah,
no?
I was in the restaurant business for years.
So you were even before you became
So I knew about business, which is rare in doctors.
That
so
is very different.
I have a restaurant. I started waiting tables when I was 16.
Okay.
Managed a top restaurant in Sunset Strip in West Hollywood during college. Got out of college. I opened a restaurant with my family, but I ran it. I ran it in Pasadena, California.
Great city. What was it called?
Holly Street Bar and Grill.
Okay, so business background, then you got into it. So that gave you an edge to be able to also not only specialize, but also scale the business. Now, how about the marketing side? Like, at what point did you say, you know what, I kind of like what I'm doing, but how about if we decide to take this thing on TV and have a reality show? Did they approach you, or did you say, I'm willing to get a little bit more public with what I'm doing here today?
I mean, every doctor would try to pitch maybe having a TV show that's a plastic surgeon. I've always been on TV. I always liked this idea. I was doing makeover shows back in the early 2000s.
Is that the Dr. 90210?
Then I did that after, a little bit.
Okay.
And then, unfortunately, we went on the Beverly Hills, Real Housewives of Beverly Hills.
How was that?
It was tough. But with that, the that gave me the option for this because the producers of that became my friends. And after that was over for us and a divorce, I sat down with the producers and I said, you know, let's do a TV show where we take messed up plastic surgery and try to fix them on TV and show all the complications and show the healing issues, show what it's really like. And I called the buddy who's on the show with me, Terry Dubrow, and I said, let's do this. And he goes, what are you, crazy? We're gonna actually put our reputations out there and do it. I go, yeah, let's do it. And so we made a little sizzle reel, just us talking about it. And E picked it up just like that. Went no pilot, straight to series. 8, which is the first pickup usually. And we did it, we filmed it, and it was a viral phenomenon, and everyone liked it because it has all the facets of, you know, a bromance, a little
big
bit of comedy.
The two of, yes.
The crazy stories. Cautionary tale, and then the aspect of helping other people, the human interest. So all those are tied in, and that's what makes for a good TV. And now we're in season 5, and I hope our numbers keep going.
And you keep talking about how South America, Central America, they watch you.
Everywhere.
That's
we're 155 different countries.
That's nice.
And then with that, I developed a skincare line, which I love. I've been into skincare for 10 years, but I finally launched it on Home Shopping Network 2 years ago. I'm going there next week. Then I go to Australia. We're now working on Amazon and more e-commerce. So I have a big anti-aging skincare line.
So, you know, this whole skin thing, you hear a lot of people come out with skin products, but I was reading the reviews. I read it where somebody was saying, you know the skin product is good. When I brought it home and I was using it, I couldn't believe how amazing it was. Then I noticed my daughter keeps taking it away from me. Mm-hmm. And she kept saying, this thing is amazing, that I had to eventually go back and buy it. And there's not a lot of skin products that I'm that devoted to, but I am with Paul Massive's product.
Oh, so, well, this is a review of mine.
This is a review of your product. So what did you do that you said, I'm gonna take a different approach with our skin product than everybody else?
First of all, there's a lot of good skincare products out there. I sat down with a great formulator out of New Jersey. My friend of mine had the company, and we sat and we talked for weeks and weeks and weeks about different products and different ideas. So my whole idea was to put a few different ingredients as the main basis, except we would have other actives in different products. Is want to make products that are specific to certain areas of your face. Like I have a forehead product, a periorbital around the eye, under eye product, I have a neck product, you know, I have a full fat, I have different products that are specific to the different parts of your face. So there's different active ingredients depending on the thickness of your skin and how your skin reacts. Like the eyelid skin is the thinnest skin in your body. So I wanted hydration as one main feature in almost every product that I have. Not moisturizing, but hydration. Getting actually, you know, the right essence of fluids into the skin. So that's hyaluronic acid is one of the main ways. Then there's other active products that help pull things in. And then I like retinol and vitamin C as my two main carriers. Vitamin C is a great antioxidant. Mm-hmm. Retinol is a natural form of vitamin A, and it's stable, not too irritating, but the combined together or mixtures of both or single, you can help, you know, the blemishes, the discolorations, help tighten, help get rid of the wrinkles. So I focused on all these. And with hydration helps get rid of wrinkles too, hydrating your skin. So I focused on these three main key points and then added other active ingredients. And that's how I put this together. And the three work very well together.
Where can we find it?
NassifMDSkincare.com.
NassifMDSkincare.com. All right, let's put that link below.
Yeah, or you could come to our office, our Nassif Skincare. I mean, our Nassif Medical Spa. Or you can go to Home Shopping Network and buy it there.
You're going to be there next week.
I'll be there next week, yeah.
You're going to be there next week. Do you know who Maxwell Maltz is? He wrote a book called Psycho-Cybernetics. I think ended up selling like 30 million books. You probably read Think and Grow Rich, or you know some of these books, business books that are out there that well-known people have read. It's one of those books, but he's an original guy. He's an old school guy. He wasn't a facial, he did cosmetic surgery. I think you would really like this book. He talks about in the book that the more and more I did and the more and more I wanted to help these guys to go through their features, the more I realized not only did I have to work on it on the outside, but also I'll have to work on people on the inside for confidence. At what point did you feel like, or did you ever have this experience where you're not only a facial cosmetic surgeon, or you also feel like you're a psychologist a little bit to help with that side?
Well, if you've seen any of the episodes on our show, we're a psychologist all the time. With plastic surgery, your second calling is a psychologist. We have to evaluate patients for all kinds of psychological illnesses, personality disorders, to find out do they have OCD, do they have body dysmorphic disorder, do they have narcissism, are they a sociopath, are they plastic surgery addicts, are they into body modification, what is the nidus for having plastic surgery, is it because they just got divorced and want to feel better? Or because their boyfriend or girlfriend is saying you should do this. We have to know everything.
You're really testing on all, asking all these questions.
No, I pull it out.
Okay, got it.
I don't ask those questions in a line, but as I'm sitting talking to the patient after doing this for a long time, I can see where the pathology is.
Okay.
So we have to make sure that everyone is doing it for the right reason and not unrealistic. Besides having a clear psychological frame of mind, it has to be perfect, it has to be crystal clear.
So how often do you say no to them?
10%.
Really?
Well, for what I do, remember, I see people from all over the world. 50% of my patients from out of California. Out of those, 20 to 25% is from out of this country. So I see patients with very bad, messed up rhinoplasties. And there's a lot of pathology there. There's a lot of problems with, you know, with self-confidence. Things that you feel really bad, depression, everything. And then on botch, for example, because it's public and you can see it, you take these people with horrible, horrible complications and that their inner soul has been crushed. And we have the opportunity, for example, to give that back. So when we do something good, it really helps people. As long as they're doing it for the right reason, it's the right situation.
You and I both know, I lived here for 25 years, I live in Dallas now. And by the way, Dallas is a pretty vain city as well. It's not like Dallas, they don't do a lot of... Everybody in Dallas wants to look very, very good. It's a very, very competitive Highland Park type of an environment. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing worse than bad plastic surgery.
Oh yeah, you don't want to do it. I mean, if you can tell someone's had plastic surgery, it's no good.
So you look at it when you see it, you know when it's some bad work done on somebody.
Well, everyone knows.
I read somewhere that you said, so do you look at people and you say, hey, you know, you should get a nose job. I can help you really go down. I can really help you make you look better, et cetera, et cetera. And I like what you said. You said, no, it's actually not my approach. I tell people you look perfect, but I can help. So your approach is more if people are coming to you. So you're not going to people, pitching them on what they want to do. They typically come to you.
A young plastic surgeon may do that in the beginning of their career. Mm-hmm. But a senior, you know, a seasoned doctor would never do that. You don't walk up. I mean, that's the most insulting thing in the world. You know, you need to have your nose done. You need to have your ears pinned back. You need some Botox. Never. Patients come up to me and people come up to me everywhere.
You know people in your world do that a lot, though. You know, there's a lot of that going on.
But that's not appropriate.
Right, I'm with you.
It's not professional.
Yeah, I mean, you're seeing even a controversy right now where some of the surgeons got caught targeting ads on young teenage girls and, you know, younger girls to go out there and do this, where retargeting stuff from their social media to it. And you're seeing it go a little bit that direction. Do you see some of this stuff making some of the younger girls and even guys feel a little insecure, the fact that they're trying to keep up and compete with it? Or is there a part of it that you're saying, well, you know, it's a healthy aspect of all of us wanting to look better?
Combination.
Okay.
Some of it's healthy, some of it is insecurity, some of it is keeping up with the Joneses. I mean, especially the younger, you know, and the Kardashian effect of big butts and big lips. I mean, that's an international push because of that. There is pressure, peer pressure sometimes too, to look good. And that's why we have to evaluate what's going on. Very important for us to figure that out with each patient to make sure they are the right candidate for surgery. Because if you operate on the wrong candidate, it's not good all the way around. Because one, let's say I do a good job on someone, but if it's the wrong candidate, besides driving me crazy, the patient, whether it's the swelling on the nose or whatever it is.
Right.
And again, there's different aspects. You can have a patient not happy. So we have to try to figure out what is the main nidus of why they're having surgery. I'm a business guy and I got a big hump on my nose and it's been driving me crazy for 20 years. And you know what? I'm going to feel better if I get rid of the hump.
Cool.
Fine.
Yeah.
Let's do it. Versus someone who comes in with six pages of letters of description of what they want, every angle of the nose. They call micrographia, when they write really small and they're deciding exactly what angle.
You get it that technical.
And with the angle and this and that, and then we'll look at you one time. I mean, there's all kinds of things.
Wow.
And this is going to help change your life and get them a job and get them out. So, you know.
How do you manage expectations? if I'm coming to you, what's your approach of managing expectation with a customer?
I'm very straightforward. I'm very blunt. I do computer morphing. I say, here's what you maybe could expect, but it's not a guarantee. And here are the negative things that could happen. I focus on the negatives first, see if I scare them. And if they're cool with the negatives, then I go, okay, you pass that litmus test, and let's now talk about hopefully what we're going to achieve with it. The nose doesn't heal normally. It heals in a three-dimensional manner. So in other words, I can do the same thing on both sides of the nose, but one side could heal different than the other. Overdoing a nose, underdoing a nose, causing nasal obstruction. It's more of collapse over time. The more aggressive you do the nose, the more risks there are. But again, I do the face, and you can injure the facial nerve, the nerve that controls movements of your face. Bleeding, infection, poor results, scar formation, everything could happen. It's something that every time you operate, like tomorrow morning, I'm doing three surgeries in a row, and tomorrow's all noses. Usually they're mixes of everything, and there's risks.
How many total noses have you worked on?
I don't know, 10,000 maybe.
10,000? It's a lot of noses to work on, right? 10,000. And how technical is the procedure, by the way? Is it a very...
Hardest plastic surgical procedure of all.
Why is that?
The nose. Probably the healing issue.
Okay.
And you know, you can just go there and whack things away, but then when you do that, that's when things get screwed up. But it's highly technical too, just trying to figure out how to make a nose look good. Very hard to do.
When you're talking about managing expectation, I was working on Morgan Stanley Dean with our broker told us this. He says, listen, you're going to have some clients you're going to need to fire because you're going to have clients that if the market does well, they're going to call you 100 times a day. If the market does bad, they're going to call you 100 times a day. You don't want those calls. He says, you need to manage expectation right up front. So they're not calling you 24/7 whether the market does good or bad. So
exactly.
It sounds like you're doing the same thing as well.
We have to. I tell them up front too. I go, you can't call every minute. I go, this is the process of healing. That's the way it is.
So somebody in your world, if someone's getting started right now, what is one way for somebody to differentiate themselves in the industry you're a part of?
I want to be truthful and honest and be a good doctor. I think if you're a good doctor and you're a good person and you go set up your shingle, you're going to slowly grow. If you can actually get a niche market of something that you do, like I'm a facial plastic surgeon, I do everything, but now I've become known as the nose specialist. So I've kind of pigeonholed myself in that, but it's the hardest surgery of all, but I like doing it. But I also like doing facelifts. So if you do that, if you pick something that you really specialize in, a different part of the body, and you know it very, very well as a super specialist, that's fantastic.
So you do the facelift as well on top of the
20, eyes,
you said 25%, whatever. You said, right?
Yeah. Do so, all the whole face.
So what's the secret sauce to the facelift so the Joker smile doesn't come out? You know how sometimes you hear about the Joker?
Well, that's when you pull this way. The best way to do is everything is lifted up in a vertical manner.
Got it.
That way
versus that way. So why do some people do it that way? It's just preference?
Preference, or maybe that's for style.
That's their style. Yeah, you see the smile when they do it, it completely changes the lips on some who take that route. As somebody who has looked at many different women in his life, you can tell a big difference when something is done a little bit too much versus something that's done too little. I was in Colorado skiing, and this lady, I sit down next to her, my wife and I said, so what do you do for them? She said, I'm a dentist. I'm like, let me ask you a question. When you look at everybody, what do you first look at? Do you look at their teeth? I always look at their teeth. I said, what do you look for? She said, I look to see the color. I said, interesting. Being the fact that you do what you do, do you look at everybody? Can you help yourself from looking at their noses? Or do you always kind of look at it and say, you know what?
Well,
if I had like an hour and a half there, I can really help them a little bit.
I glance looking for pretty noses.
So be in the world that you're in, give us a pretty nose. Who has a really pretty nose? And you'd say, that to me is a very nice nose.
You know,
both men and women.
Yeah, a beautiful female, still Megan Fox, still has a gorgeous nose. Or old actress Grace Kelly. You know, a guy, I've had my nose done four times.
Now, do you do it yourself? Like, do you sit there and just kind of go?
I went to a buddy of mine, but I had skin cancer over here. I personally, you know, now, I mean, when I look at a good-looking nose, I got to tell you, I know it sounds weird, but my nose is a good-looking nose now. I mean, the profile is sharp, it's nice, and it's strong. I'm not a movie star, but I think that a lot of my patients love my nose and want me to try to get something like that.
What's crazy about your nose is it doesn't even look like you done work on it.
Yeah, because except, you know, and like I said, I have scars here. I have all types of things, but I have a lot of reconstruction here. But it looks good, it looks natural. Yeah, I'm going to say my nose.
You're going to say your nose?
I'm going to say my nose.
Props to you, man. You know, not a lot of people can tell themselves they're the best, but you're saying
I mean, I have a good-looking nose. Now, but it took 30 years or whatever it was
to get it. So who does your work? Who do you trust?
I flew a buddy of mine out in Chicago.
He does it from, he comes in from Chicago?
No, I flew out to go see a buddy of mine.
You flew out to Chicago. And all the four have been done by your friend?
No. He did the last one.
He did the last one. Yeah. For a guy like you to trust somebody, that's a lot of credibility. To have a friend do this. Look, no one gets to your level in any space on what they do without having certain disciplines. Paul, behind this, behind all these things that you built and behind everything that you're doing and the position you have in town where everybody in Beverly Hills, if they mention a name, your name's gonna come up. What are some daily disciplines you've had over the years that's helped you that maybe at some point when you also became a surgeon like some of the other peers, they didn't have certain disciplines that helped you get to a level that you're at right now?
Yeah, I'm gonna say that this has kind of become, you know, more in line for me recently. But one thing I gotta tell you is you gotta keep focused all the time. Sleeping a good at least 7 hours, working out in the morning before work, before the beginning of the day. These
what
are my
time,
disciplines.
What time do you start in the morning?
5:30 or 6.
No matter what?
Yeah. I'm working about 5 days a week.
So you sleep early.
I mean, now, I used to not sleep as much. But now I really try to go to bed and get a good 7 hours, sometimes even 8. These are disciplines that I feel you're setting yourself up for success. I've lost a good amount of weight, because that's actually not good for your health. I do intermittent fasting. I don't eat for 16 hours a day.
Our CFO does that as well.
And I try to now cut down the flour and the sugar. So discipline food.
Have you always been like this, or this is recent, the discipline?
No, I haven't always. Working out, yes, but now I'm more disciplined. Especially as I'm getting older, I got to be able to go all day long.
Got it.
Plus, I have other things. I have a medical practice. Mm-hmm. I have a show. I have a skincare line. Mm-hmm. I got a medical spa, which does everything. I have children. Girlfriend, you got to be able to juggle all those.
Final thoughts, I'll give it to you. We're in a very competitive environment as entrepreneurs. If you don't get better, I mean, the world of capitalism, somebody wants your marketplace.
That's
true. Wake up every single day, somebody wants your name, somebody
Absolutely.
Wants your show, somebody wants Botch.
Exactly.
Somebody wants your territory, somebody wants your customers, somebody wants to take you out.
Yes.
How do you consistently stay competitive? And by the way, two ways I want this to be answered, if you don't mind taking it this direction. One, not the 2018 Nassif, Dr. Nassif. I want that 1999, 2000, when you were coming up, Dr. Nassif, as well as today.
Back then for me, the thing was, since it was already 1,000 fish, it was a small fish in a big pond in Beverly Hills. It still is. There's still 1,000 doctors. So with that, how do you take a small fish in a big pond and make them a whale? And back then I said to myself, one, I have to keep learning. Keep my mind open to learning about new procedures, how to constantly improve. And as I mentioned, I had to pick an area where there was a weakness in the market, and it was revision, rhinoplasty, or nose jobs. So that's that. Those are my two concepts that I did back then. Now, one thing I still hold to this many years later is no matter how good I am, I'm constantly learning and constantly upgrading and changing and devising and writing research papers, changing the way I do different parts of the nose. Every year or so, different parts keep changing.
How do you get better with that, though? Do you go other places to see it?
Is you like may go other places, or you're in the middle of surgery, and you say, you know what, I'm gonna try this. And you think, and you experiment. Not an experiment where you're gonna cause a bad problem,
right.
But your mind has to keep growing and thinking. You have to take constructive criticism. You have to look at your results critically.
Who gives you constructive criticism?
Myself.
Got it.
At my level, no one's gonna give it to me. I do it to myself. I focus on my noses and my post-operative, and I look at areas where I'm not happy with. So I kept that. I have to be self-disciplined to keep making sure that I strive to be better, take constructive criticism for myself, learn new techniques from everybody, whether they're just brand new or 50 years in practice. And I think if you can keep an open mind and not be a narcissist, I think that you're not the best one in the world and you'll never learn. Say, you know what, I'm good at what I do, but I can still learn a hell of a lot more. That's gonna keep you on top of your game.
Are you a big reader?
Medically, I have to read a lot. Plus, with my business, the issue is I have all my emails to do late at night. So I don't have a lot of free time except for the weekends. Then when on the weekends, if I'm not with the kids, I love to read.
What do you read?
I've been reading recently political books.
Such as?
I just read the James Comey book.
What'd you think?
Higher Loyalty.
Oh, yeah, Loyalty.
I liked it. I did vote for Trump. I liked the book. You know, it shed some different light. But then all I know is I've been walking by my rooms and seeing that there's some kind of issue going on right now with an FBI probe or something going on. So when I saw Comey's name up there, someone said, okay, now what's happening? So it was an interesting book just about the world of justice, the White House, and about FBI. Then I also read, even though I kept an open mind, but I read that Fist of Fury or Fist and Fury.
You know, yes. What did you think about that?
Was it
entertaining or was
it? No, it was, because a lot of the characters in that book, you learn about personalities. It's a learning process to read. Now, whether all of it, you have to take everything with a grain of salt. But now I'll read another political book coming up. You know, I'm going to read now something on the pro side.
Skin in the Game?
Yeah. Is that the one?
Have you read it?
No. Well, that's Skin. I have not read Skin in the Game yet.
Oh, you got to read Skin in the Game.
But that'll be my next one. I'll go buy now. So I'm reading about all these different things.
Interesting.
And politics. So now what I'm reading about more than anything, I've highly gotten into politics in the last 3-4 months.
What caused it?
I don't know. I just started getting into it. You know, we don't know what's going to happen. Good, bad, and different, we don't know.
How strange is that, huh? That politics is coming. So in the last, I've sat down with Jerry Springer. He went straight politics. Mm-hmm. It was a heated debate. We had a great time together. Ben Shapiro, politics. Arianna Huffington, politics. Prager, I don't know if you know Prager. Dennis Prager, local. Big, big radio guy on KRLA. Laffer, Arthur. Are you familiar with Arthur Laffer? The Laffer curve, the guy who was the economist for Kemp and Bush and Reagan and all these guys. Yeah, I think you'll enjoy Skin in the Game. If you're looking for really good, I don't think you're going to be able to put, I get a lot of book recommendations. I've read 1600 books. Very few books keep me. And Skin in the Game, I just couldn't. I'm reading every one of his books. He's got 4 books out. I'm reading all 4 of them. I finished Skin in the Game last week. I got 3 more to go. Now I'm reading another strategy book right now. That's just 700-page strategy book that explains every single strategy that's been used in every aspect of life. Religion, Democratic Party, the devil, politics, controlling, military, generals, Napoleon, Prince, Machiavelli. And it's like 600 pages of every single historical strategy that I was ever used against people, it's in there in one book. So instead of reading all these books, it's all in it. Fascinating. I never recommend 600-700 page books, but it's an incredible book.
I will. That's the next one.
I'll send it to you. Can we make a note of that? Let's send both of them. I want you to keep a couple things in mind. You know, sometimes inspiration on what somebody wants to do in their lives happens like this. It is so weird on how it happened. People ask me and say, Pat, did you think you were going to go into financial services and be a stockbroker at Morgan Stanley Dean Witter? No, it's called I watched Gordon Gekko and Bud Fox, and I said, I wouldn't mind getting a Series 7 and getting into the industry. Somebody may be watching this right now. You may listen to his story and like his style and his swagger that he has. And you may say, look, I may want to get into this space in a completely different country, and he's in Beverly Hills, because, by the way, in here, 1 out of 10 people you run into is pretty much a plastic surgeon. So to make it to his level, this is not an easy place to make it to his level in Beverly Hills. When I said 1 out of 10, I'm making up that number. That's not a factual stat. I'm just making a point to you that there's a lot of people here that do what he does. But if you got any questions, you're big on Twitter or on Instagram. I see you're pretty active on Twitter every once in a while, maybe more on Instagram than
Instagram,
Twitter.
Yeah. I mean, I have a little help with that, though, because I don't personally review.
So is that going to be you, or is that going to be somebody
else? I have
else?
My nephews help me with my social media.
So where can they get a hold of you? That maybe they're going to hear back from you if they message you.
The best way probably to do it is to go to drpaulnassif.com, and then there's inquiries. And you can actually, and they do come to the office and they give them to me, versus calling my office. I'm in Beverly Hills.
Call his office, man. He's in Beverly Hills. Okay, you're talking to the man, Dr. Paul Nassif. Brother, thank you so much for taking the time.
Pleasure.
Really enjoyed it. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And by the way, if you haven't already subscribed to Valuetainment on iTunes, please do so. Give us a 5-star. Write a review if you haven't already. And if you have any questions for me that you may have, you can always find me on Snapchat, Instagram, Facebook, or YouTube. Just search my name, Patrick Bid-David. And I actually do respond back when you snap me or send me a message on Instagram. With that being said, have a great day today. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.